to the Berkshire Gravity Heights Board of Education regular meeting this Monday, the 22nd of February, 2016, in the Education Center at 7 p.m. This is a meeting of the Board of Education in public for the purpose of conducting the school district's business and is not to be considered a public community meeting. There's a time for public participation during the meeting as an indicated agenda item. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Brunauer?
Yes.
Mr. Dennison?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack? Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Just as a note, Mrs. Mack is ill this evening and won't be joining us. Please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I didn't see the approval of the agenda. Item items. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Nothing additional.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Brunauer?
Mr.
Dennison?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 4-0. Item D, resolution to approve the minutes of the meetings of February 1, 2016, February 4, and February 16, 2016. May I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Comments, questions? Roll call, please.
Mrs. Brunauer?
Yes.
Mr. Dennison?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 4-0. Item E, resolution to approve the financial reports of January 2016 in tab 2. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Mr. Gunn.
Thank you. I'll take much time here this evening. My usual slide, too. You have the rest of the slides for additional information, but for the month of January, we are actually slightly ahead on variance, $867,000, which some of you is more than slight, but timing of tax advances is very inconsistent, and we prefer that they be more positive than the other options. So, but that will settle itself out as we get to the settlement, which will likely be sometime in April that will occur. So it's a 1 month good news and as we move forward into the succeeding ones. The property tax allocation, I talked about that extensively last month, the timing of TPP and now TPP supplemental payments, and that we would likely get 90% of that $1.7 million that we're anticipating in this fiscal year. 10% will get deferred till next year, and I have every confidence we will receive it all of it, which is being a much more disjointed fashion than we've seen in the past. The all other operating revenues were running about $48,000 positively. Expected that would likely continue, and we'll adjust that in the May forecast. And then the $20,000, I believe I mentioned previously, but it's really the efforts of Chris Code and Mary LaRoche, some of the participation they do on behalf of the district in some workers' comp safety pools and other activities against some different rebates. So it's like three-time money, but it's only once for each one, and it's accumulated to that amount. So we may or may not get that in future years. It depends on the participation, which will still happen, but it also depends on the performance of the workers' comp system and them having access to funds that they're able to provide back to employers in this way. So on the expenditures, one thing that I didn't anticipate happening is we've had, I believe it's 7 additional retirements since September. They're in the classified side. But then those folks get severance payments made during the current school year after their retirement. So my severance forecast and salary estimate was off a little bit because of not having the ability to know that when we were working on the forecast back in September. So again, that's something we'll need to modify as we get to May. We also have the 0.7 FTE increase that you've seen on the spreadsheet for Mr. Wyckoff for the ELL teacher that was approved by the board for the addition of that. And we've had a 3.35 FTE increase in BOSS that you've also seen for special education assistance. A little bit of that is bus driver hour, but it's very, very minor. And that most of it's special education assistance that are driven by IEP. And I believe that the bulk of that, I don't remember the exact FTE, but the bulk of that are for students new to the district, so there was no way to know or plan for that on the staffing side or the forecast side, but that's causing a little bit of that change. The deficit in the employee retirement and insurance benefits, it's related to those positions, and it's been happening now for most of the months of this year, also because of the increase in the bus driver side. While it's been very small in terms of FTE from reinstatement of the half-day, everyday kindergarten model, the small incremental changes that happened for a number of drivers put them above the hour, the weekly hours threshold to qualify for full-time benefits versus part-time benefits, and that becomes about a 50 to 60% increase in cost for each one of those. I believe there are five or six drivers that qualified for that as a result of that. So that's the biggest piece of what is going on in that particular item as well. We don't have retirement workers' comp costs on the increased severance payments. So a little bit of that $52,000 is the increased FTEs and for the ELL, but most of it's a result of that bus driver change and the insurance packages that those people are eligible to get. And we also don't know that at the beginning of the school year. By the time we finish bidding routes here in October, per the terms of our contract, the way we have the bidding is done for roughly 50 drivers. So that's the negative news of the evening. Then we're more positive, as you can see, in three of the four other areas. In total, we're still about $266,000 favorable. I would expect that, knowing how our budgets typically work here, and I think I say this almost every month, if not every, our people don't spend if they don't need, and there will be some excess amounts in those budgets. We try to budget closely, but we certainly don't get to zero. And where we end up negative, we want to be able to explain those variances, as we've done with the personal services and the fringe benefits. The bottom one, although I normally report five significant digits to the left of the decimal or more, because of our increased contribution to cap and that operating transfers out is about $8,000. We increased our contribution to that by 10, so that's really the deficit on that particular, not really a deficit, but a negative variance, I should say. All in all, through the month of January, we're $700,000 to the good, but these two revenue items make that somewhat misleading. So we'll continue to monitor it, we'll continue to analyze the variances, and we'll do an update again in May when we get to that forecast. So April, May, we'll be working through that, so not too far off.
So when you look at the full year, really the only non-timing related item of any magnitude here is the severances, and we understand what that is. Anything else at work for the full year?
Now, the only thing would be, there could be a delay, as I mentioned, in that TVPP is 10%, would be $170,000 variance on that that could occur. We've had a slight downturn in February. Official enrollments for the current school year were implemented in February by the Ohio Department of Education. So we do have a slight decrease, $20,000 in our special education transportation funding. And that's an amount that's in addition to the guaranteed funding we know we get from foundation, but it is a decline from last year, which is a decline from this forecast. So $20,000 again to us is a lot of money in our personal pockets, but in light of about $37 million, it becomes fairly minimal as a percentage of our operations here. But I don't think that was going to change much. I don't anticipate an influx of special education identified students that we will then place on our bus routes, which then would cause those travel costs of ours to increase. So I think that one will stay as a decline.
And when we say severance, really that's in essence accumulated sick leave.
It is.
So it's earned. It's not, we're not paying people to retire.
It is not paying people to retire. It's not paying people to leave for other reasons. It's a percentage of accumulated sick leave that we're obligated by negotiated agreements to pay out to them. Those amounts, in reviewing it again today to make sure that I was right, refreshing my brain from when I put this together, the amounts vary widely from person to person.
Can you review the timing of when that gets paid out? So, and does it vary then between DEA and BOSS?
DEA and support are all different. Boss gets paid out, and it's within a short time after retirement.
Short time being a month?
Yes, it can be a month. Like we had some that retired in December, we paid them in January.
Okay.
He has the January following the date of retirement.
Okay.
Admins are paid in two payments, the January following, the two Januaries following retirement. So it's split over two. I'm not sure of the origins of any of those because they predate me being here, but it's not consistent across the three groups.
But that's accounted for in the forecasting model that you plug in. So if you know we've got 10 teachers retiring in the summer, you know that come January there's going to be the severance payout for those, right?
So everyone that I knew about in September was in the forecast.
Right.
This differential are ones that I did not know about at the time we did that, because we keep that spread. We keep a spreadsheet of every person. We already have people we know are retiring at the end of the year. We have them in our spreadsheet for FY17. So we build that salary amount in. We don't assess fringes on it because we don't pay them. So trying to be true on our numbers in the fringe side, we don't do that automatic calculation that we would do on any other salary payment. And in the next succeeding year after the year of payment, we back out what we know we paid in the prior fiscal, and then we put in what we think we know to be correct. And that occurred this year. I had no reason to expect 7 classified retirements would happen. Maybe I should have thought of a few because SCRS rule changes are occurring this June, which happened last year for STRS, but didn't put it in there. So
those payouts, the rationale, I assume, to get paid out in January is if they retire in the summer, and at the end of the school year, they defer that income to the following year when they're no longer working and generating an income.
I think that's one reason. The second reason, I believe, is for cash flow purposes, that the district would be able to recoup a portion of the cost of that severance from the savings of the new hire. And that's been a logic I know in prior districts where I've worked, that you're also able to recoup some of that. And where with administrators, the reason I believe that to be true, even in this case, for our district, with administrators, you don't typically save a lot, if anything. So you're deferring that over two Januaries. So therefore, you have a little more time to spread that payment where you aren't likely to recoup as much of the savings in 1 year.
And I would guess that as far as administration and teachers, most of the time, I think it's really unusual for people to leave in the middle of the year. Of course, with the boss, there are a lot of year round.
Very rare with teachers, very rare with administrators, admin assistants. Perhaps we don't have that many that are in that particular category. We don't have that many employees. Boss or whatever acronym is used in any other district, very normal.
I figured they could go anytime during the year.
And they do. They're no less those contracts as well as maybe the personal ties to a school year calendar are not nearly as strong as it is with teachers tied to a set of students in a classroom. It's just not the same anywhere up there.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernhardt? Mr. Dawson?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion carries 4-0. Item F, other business of the Treasurer CFO. We've got appropriations, modifications, and transfers between funds. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
First item, when I asked you previously to approve the appropriations, we had $110,000 in there that we were anticipating advancing on a temporary loan basis from the general fund to our resale accounts. We ended up not doing that amount of money, so we didn't need to budget that amount for expenditure, and it's not really an expenditure anyhow. It's an in and a back out once they recoup from the collection of students for resale items. So that just brings that into line with what should have been done previously when we knew when we did the forecast, we knew we were reducing that amount, so that should be put in place. Then the transfer between funds, Fundo 22 is used for stale dated checks, for unclaimed funds is the technical term, but it's really stale dated checks that we have issued over the years, and there's a provision in law where you're supposed to take those if they aren't, checks aren't cashed within a 90-day time period, take them out of the bank fund, move them into 22. We don't do that quite as well now as the district used to, I'll say, but when that was done, this amount of money accumulated, those funds have never been claimed. But also, good luck finding the backup that created that amount of money after 4 or 5 years and longer of those funds accruing, because I cannot find it existing anywhere. So that amount has been that amount for 5, 6, 7 years now. So typically what would happen is after a five-year period of being unclaimed, it would convert back to the original paying fund, since we don't have that source data. The next best thing that I know to do is to ask the board to approve it being transferred back to the general fund, which is likely the place for most of it, but likely not all of it. But it seems to be the most prudent thing to do to clean that up and get it back to where it can be used for the benefit of the students. So, longer explanation than probably needed, but it's also an unusual type of transaction where that would be.
It's like on a lottery, unclaimed lottery.
It is. Nobody came to get them. We can't find the source data. None of the employees currently were here when it was last done in that manner. So the one legal thing I know is, by law, we can ask the board as the governing authority of the school district to move this money, and that should stand very soundly with our auditors when they see this item.
So based on dead AR, but dead AP.
Really?
It's a long explanation for $7,900.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernard?
Yes.
Mr. Dawson?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Item passes 4-0. Item F3, resolve to approve the resolution to invoice the Ohio Department of Education for charter school deductions from state funding as set forth in attachment tab 3.
That item we discussed at the last meeting.
Somebody has to.
Oh, yeah, motion, please.
So moved.
Second.
I got a second by Mr. Dawson. My apologies. Didn't have myself. We discussed this at a prior meeting. I actually don't remember whether it was a special meeting or a regular meeting last month, because we've had a couple of them recently for a variety of reasons. But I borrowed this resolution from another district, added it to our purposes and our numbers that have occurred since the inception of charter school, community school legislation in Ohio, which took us back to 2002. We did not have any students in 2002 that participated. We have had an increasing number of students each year since, with a couple of exceptions. Most notably this year, we are actually down about $60,000. And I did spend quite a bit of time, I know, before talking about some of the things we do with residency verification, things like that, that helps drive that back down. So I won't bore you with that again, perhaps. But I'll be happy to address whatever questions. I think beyond that, the resolution speaks for itself. I don't proclaim to be the author of it, other than I did borrow and edit it from other school districts that have taken similar action.
The students from our district that are attending charters, do you know, or do we know, is it predominantly online schools, or are they traveling somewhere outside the district?
There are some traveling. Mrs. Bernard, I had this conversation today. We know this year there are 3 students traveling to West Park in Cleveland for a gifted brick-and-mortar school. Gifted identified students have to meet certain admissions criteria with test scores to be enrolled there. There was another one student I know that was attending a school in Parma. There may be a couple of others that were in there that I'm not recalling right now, but for the most part, beyond that, it was Ohio Virtual, ECOT, TRECA, those types of schools that are online electronic schools.
And really, anybody in our district, if they so wanted to, could basically switch over to a charter school, and then the money follows them. And what is that? Is it still like $5,700?
The base amount is $5,900, assuming that's a regular ed student in grades 4 or above. There's a differential payment for students, a third grade reading guarantee, supplemental payment for students grade 3 or below, And where the biggest money comes is if there's a special education identified student. And we talked about one of those that we identified today, where the base amount was $5,900. It's the one going to the partner school. And the supplemental service amount was, I believe, $24,000. It ended up being about $31,000 for that one student in total. $31,000, I won't digress on this topic, but $31,000 is certainly a lot of money for one student. I'm not sure what that cost would translate into here, because I think we talked about this recently, but you know, we've had students that individually have cost us up to $158,000 last school year for their cost of attendance in special education programs. Costs absorbed directly by this district, with some offsets from state funding and supplemental state funding sources. But I would say we're still probably paying about $100,000 for some of those high cost students. So 31 sounds awful, and it is a lot of money. There may be more awful alternatives in that particular one student's case.
So what is the total this year projected?
It's 174,000, I believe. The most recent number of certified enrollments, they're attending charters and community schools, I think it's 24.14 FTE. And the reason you get into those parts is they did A9 roll for a whole school year, whether they start later or end early. And you have those supplemental amounts that happen for the items that I mentioned. So it worked out, I think today we were talking, it's like $7,140 or something on average for the 24.14 students. But certainly the $31,000 student is an outlier. And there were some that were just $5,900 because they're a grade 4 or higher regular education.
But I guess I want to add, too, because of the school funding formula, we actually only get, what, $1,259 per student. So when we were doing the math today, I mean, we're losing about, as an average, about $5,000 of our local tax money goes with these kids. And what I did this afternoon, the reason I called Mr. Burdine, is I went on to knowyourcharter.com. I don't know if any of you have done that, but you can go to that site and plug in your school district, and it shows your school district's ratings, and then it shows the ratings of the charters that kids within your own district go to. And it was last year's school data, though, so it was 288,000 last year and 11. And I mean, obviously the financial burden is huge, but I'm just as concerned because out of the 11 charters that the kids went to last year, there was only one that got an A rating, and that was the gifted brick and mortar school that that Rick talked about. There was one B, there were five C's, three D's, and an F. So I kind of feel like we have a responsibility to our students as well. Do you know what I mean? For their education. And you're right. They have the right to go where
but
they
want. But it's parents who are deciding.
Right, exactly.
So they can look and either decide.
No,
it doesn't bother them that that school's got an F or they don't know. And
sometimes they just don't know, I think, sometimes. You know.
And I don't know the exact percentages. I think I said this last month, but some of these students we've never seen. They reside in our district. We've never seen them. They haven't chosen to leave us. They've never experienced us.
Once
it's a high school where you typically see the movement out, where a student might be credit deficient, so they're looking at credit recovery options. Those students, we are doing a much better job, and that sounds judgmental about the past, and it's no thanks to me, so I'm not taking any credit, but our guidance services at the high school are doing a much better job of trying to get those students moved into the online program that we offer in cooperation with the ESC of Cuyahoga County, in which we participated in the selection of that curriculum. And so to the degree we can get them there, they can still earn a Brecksville-Broadview Heights high school diploma rather than XYZ diploma from a charter or community school. And there is a difference, and I won't go into all that either, but there's a difference whether you're talking Armed Services, NCAA Clearinghouse. There is a difference in the types of diplomas that are issued and how they view those in those types of worlds that are out there. Colleges certainly as well. But it's not just colleges that look at them differently. The Armed Services do, and even the NCAA Clearinghouse does. So it's something we'll always be mindful of. And you know, that because I don't want to hammer guys. Regina's going to talk about guidance later. I didn't help you, Gina. Sorry about that. But early on, as with most school districts probably didn't do a real good job of having the alternatives in place to offer to families where students were credit deficient. We all got better as a result of these schools going after that type of student originally. Not that they're bad kids, not that they're dumb, they're not anything. They're struggling academically for a host of reasons. And we now offer a really viable program that, in my opinion, surpasses what those dropout risk types of students are going to experience anywhere else. And we're doing a good job of getting those students into there, which is the biggest piece of that decline. Residency verification is helping, but the alternative programs we're offering are better as well, and we're doing a good job getting kids there.
And the 5,900, that's the average that's from the state that districts?
That's the base amount. Our average is about 7,100, but again, the outlier is the $31,000 student.
But the base amount is what follows the student if they leave and go to a charter.
Plus the supplementals for third grade.
Plus the supplementals, right.
Yes, but the $5,900 is guaranteed. If you're a four-year student that leaves, $5,900 minimum. Yes.
So just for some of the new faces in our audience today, what that means is that students from our district can choose to not go to our schools and go to a charter school. And the state establishes a base amount of $1,500 per student that needs to follow the student. So every student that leaves our district, $5,900, most of which is our local tax money, leaves our district. And the state gives us like $1,200-plus per student funding because we're an affluent district. So the state gives us $1,200. We send out $5,900, and the difference is what we lose. And that's an unfunded mandate. That it's mandated that students are allowed to go to charter schools, and when they do, and in a district like ours where we only get $1,200 and $5,900 leaves, we lose that. If you were in another district that gets $5,900, it'd be a wash and they wouldn't lose anything. But we are not that district, so we lose money, and that's our local tax money. And the more students that leave to go to charters, the more money we lose out of our system, which is why we have put in place programs and focus to try to retain students and offer the services they're looking for, because it's better for them and it's better for us.
And this resolution, to Mr. Dosen's point, from 2002, which I said we had zero, through the current year, the current amount that we know in February, over the course of those 14 years, we've lost $2,752,526 to those schools. We will pass this resolution, I assume it, but...
we're going to have some discussion about it first.
Gotcha. And assuming its passage, we will invoice the Department of Education, and that invoice will be ceremonial in all likelihood. We're not the first district to do it. The state has never ponied up to reimburse. I think they are taking note of the number of districts doing it. I don't expect we will ever collect this. We won't hold this as a receivable on the books. We will do none of that in our accounting reports. We do it year-end, and Mr. Ziegler had talked about that earlier. But the likelihood of us collecting anything is slim to none and probably closer to none. So that I want you to know that while we will do that, I don't want someone to listen to this recording and think, oh, my goodness, they might get $2.7 million. That's probably not happening.
And that's why I'm going to vote no on this, because it is so symbolic that it makes us non-serious. Now, I would agree with sending a letter approaching our state government in any other way, put the sentiment invoice that we're not going to book. That, you know, I mean, to me, it's just being with the herd. I'd rather approach it more maturely. And let's, you know, put this information. We believe we've lost $2.7 million over this time. We believe we need a change. We believe the charter schools don't offer what we offer. I mean, again, I'm not supporting charter school. I'm not saying they can do nearly the job we can do. I think we just need a different approach to try to change that, because they're not going to look back and give us our money. I mean, it's just not going to happen. So let's just go, look, it really wounded us. What do we need to do to make sure this isn't going to continue? And that type of approach, I think, puts us at the forefront of maybe leading change, as opposed to jumping on the let's send them an invoice bandwagon, and if everybody bangs the kettle loudly enough, maybe we'll get some attention. So again, in my opinion, a symbolic resolution to write a $2.7 million invoice just isn't serious.
I guess I think it's a little bit more than just a symbolic. I know chances of us getting any of this money is probably not going to happen. But at the same time, I think that taking this action helps kind of educate our taxpayers on what's happening. I mean, people are well aware of the cuts that we've gotten from this, you know, State Department. They're well aware of what's happening with the TPP. We've advertised all those kinds of things. I think there are probably even teachers in our district that have no idea how much we've actually lost to charters. It is, as Mark said, it's another unfunded mandate. And I believe about 40 districts in the state have done it. So we're not the first.
No,
it's not a big blanket, but
it was something that
I heard about at OSBA when we were there in November and talked to a few people about. So I'm actually hoping you'll consider passing it.
Well, I don't mind doing something symbolic, so long as we all know this is going to the circular file in Columbus. And it's completely symbolic. And Mike, to your point, if we want this to really gain any momentum in our community and in Columbus, then we better do more than just this. Because this is rah-rah. Yes, it's symbolic, but let's not pat ourselves on the back as far as the effect it's going to truly have in Columbus. We need to do more than this.
But I think it is, you know, other districts that have done it, it is a mechanism where if more and more districts do it, and the numbers escalate of how many are doing it, you know, it's the squeaky wheel gets the grease kind of thing, just like letters, right? Just like we had these campaigns, email campaigns, when we had the loss of TPP, and we mobilized our community to send. The more that came in, you know, the more attention the legislature we received, and they were able to do something for us. So, yeah, this is symbolic. You know, it's part of the bigger picture that other districts are doing something similar. You know, I don't have a problem with doing this as well as taking other actions, too. And, you know, there's, you know, no harm, no foul. Just, you know, throw it out there and maybe other districts do the same thing and we get their attention and they start looking at it more seriously about providing relief instead of these unfunded mandates, along with the other loss of TPP and some of the other challenges that we've had from the state funding standpoint.
Right now, the dollars change is the same for other private schools.
We don't lose any money for other privates, just for charter schools.
Purely so. St. Ignatius' choice doesn't cost us a cent. It's just going to identify for sure. Isolate the money. I mean, it still doesn't.
And for the benefit of some of our member attendees this evening, what Mark was referring to was we appealed to Representative Manielski and Senator Patton when it had to do with some of our major funding issues from earlier in the year. And a lot of people say, well, my voice doesn't count. We got a great response from our elected legislators. And their initial positions weren't exactly aligned with ours, but through a lot of concerted effort and logical presentation of the arguments, we had a lot of strong support, which we greatly appreciated.
Which, again, to me, I would hate to erode that credibility by taking this kind of symbolic jump on the bandwagon move. That's my reason for not agreeing with doing this. It's the only reason. Again, I'm sympathetic with the effort. I'm just saying, let's make sure we don't craft some kind of message that is going to be deleterious to what we're trying to get done as opposed to support.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernauer?
Yes.
Mr. Dennison?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
No.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 3-1. Item G, communications.
Dr. Simpson.
Thank you. meetings about this and some prior meetings this year. It is an ongoing process, and the last time when we had the survey results, we gave you what was, what we were calling it, the 50,000 foot view, and we're starting to bring it down a little each time. So this is the update on the school counselor action plan development. And the development of this plan is part of our district strategic vision plan for this school year. And overall, for people who might take notes for an assignment, the strategic vision is when a district looks at particular goals and things that we want to do to move the district forward, and we look at different areas of need and things that we can focus on. And the school counselor action plan is one of the things that we felt we needed to focus on. So these are the things that we've completed so far. We reviewed the information and the data from prior council meetings, because before we initiated the survey, we had been having regularly scheduled counselor meetings, one each quarter, at least since the time that I've been here. And we talk about different topics, we have an agenda in advance and a summary, but a lot of these kind of things actually started to have part of that discussion even prior to deciding to do a survey. And so that's what we led into that, and then we did the parent survey. And we reviewed those results, and I know you've received those results in prior board information flyers and in past presentations. And then we also reviewed those results with the school counselors and shared it with the principals at a meeting. We actually shared it with the school counselors prior to sharing it with the administrators, because they really had some good input in the development of the questions, and we wanted to have them, you know, ensure that they had some ownership to it. And as a result of that, we outlined for them that the next several work sessions, and we've had two since the survey results, because we had the winter break in there, and so we didn't have a third one as we might have planned. They've been working on looking at the survey results and prioritizing the top outcomes, and then also looking for where we might have gaps or areas of need. And our hope is that by the end of this process, we'll be able to come to you with some goals and strategies, and then get some further input from you. We're also conducting a study of comparable districts on the services that they provide. To date, the high school is the one that has completed theirs. The middle school and elementaries are still working on that. Just a quick aside to that, the high school counselors looked at 9 different districts, and they also included a couple of private, just so we had a little bit of a comparison. And they were looking at services that they provide compared to the services that we currently provide, and also lining it up with what areas of need and gaps that might be coming out of the results of the survey and what parents are feeling they would think are benefits to the counseling services we provide. And some of those dealt with a specific counselor for college preparedness and readiness, also extended days and how they're utilized. There are, you know, a couple other things that we have looked at. And then the survey findings, I just kind of recapped again what the really long BIF with all the real actual percentages were, because this is also a result of those work sessions since then, where these are the gaps or the areas of need that correlated not only with the survey results as the highest priority for parents in the different areas, but that the counselors also were seeing in some of the feedback from administrators. That at the elementary level, the highest priorities are services on education of students regarding understanding self, things like building confidence, peer interactions, those kinds of skill sets, crisis support, and positive school climate. And we're working on actually some of those things even through the RTI process that kind of dovetail. The middle school's highest priorities. And as you can see, the list gets a little bit more priority-driven as the kids get older, because counselors become a little bit more of an integral part of things when it comes to academic planning and post-secondary career and college options. Academic support for students, peer relation services. Again, the positive school climate is a pretty common theme. Information about programs that encourage and promote opportunities. Again, we're starting to see and hear from parents, as well as what we evidence, that we have to start a little bit earlier with some of that preparedness, information, and readiness, and crisis support services. The high school priorities, again, some similarities: academic support, post-secondary college and career planning, post-secondary college and career scholarship and financial information, school-to-work transition services, parent consultation to discuss different aspects that can help their students, problem-solving and decision-making strategies. And that one was a little under, so carried to the next. The need for increased and earlier information. What we're finding from the work sessions is a lot of colleges, everything is getting bumped up sooner and sooner and earlier, and so a lot of the things the counselors in their discussions are saying, they almost need to start some things in the summer in preparation for students to have that availability for things like college applications or other readiness, or even looking, you know, early enough to what their different requirements might be and the things that they might need, and even starting to research things like the financial aid and the need for increased proactive research-based programs, and I kind of outlined those there. So these are the things that are next steps, or the things that yet need to be completed. We need to continue to prioritize those desired services. We want to hone them down, you know, so we get some more specifics. Complete that survey of the comparable districts, meaning we still need to get the middle school and elementary, and the goal is by the next work session that that would be completed. And complete a proposal to address the most significant needs, finalize an action plan with the strategies, and present it, the proposed action plan, for feedback from you and the superintendent. I believe that would be the end. Any questions or comments?
I know it's probably on our work plan. When do you anticipate bringing in the final plan to us?
Well, the survey took a little bit longer to develop,
right?
So we were a little bit delayed with that. I'm hoping, you know, on my strategic plan that I have kind of outlined, I believe I put out there May. To give a final presentation, knowing that if it got bumped back, if we need to make sure it was really solid, I still had June.
No, that's fine. I was just curious on that one. Yeah. Sounds like you're doing great work.
How are the surveys going out? Is that just like a constant contact email blast? Or
the parent surveys?
Right. Or is that
those are the ones that already went out, and they were generated as a mass email through a constant contact. We also provided paper copies and put that out to people, obviously through other venues than the website, because if you don't have a computer, you're going to see that on there. And surprisingly, out of all the ones that got returned, we got a pretty expected return rate. You usually expect a 25 to 35% return rate. And we collated all of that and provided that previously. But we actually had three paper copies completed and returned. So I thought that was, you know, good that they took the initiative and were interested, and we put them at all of the buildings, including the board office.
Right, but I thought one of your items was to survey middle school and elementary school.
Oh, that part was since the last survey. That's to just talk with the different comparable schools, comparable demographics, comparable enrollment,
okay,
and get information about what services do they provide, and then comparing, do we have similar programs? What are they doing that maybe helps their performance or their services? And the high school got right on it. Because the high school, you know, I think, you know, in all true big picture, they seem to see the biggest need for some of those potentially, you know, increased services or difference in how they look, if that kind of makes sense. Did that answer your question?
I think so, yeah.
Anything else?
I know this might be more language than anything else, but in the priorities for high school and middle school,
sure,
we talk about academic support, I mean, and direction, too, right? Isn't there, I mean,
yeah,
that component there? You know, because I know if if students aren't somewhat at least challenged, you know, the potential, all that jazz, and I know that happened for some of my kids and everything.
Well, and actually, interesting point to that is when you look at the specifics of how that particular header came out, I just tried to not make it so lengthy, but that was one of the things. It wasn't just academic support and performance. It was things like tutoring in areas of need. It was also helping them with study skills, organizational skills, problem solving, interacting and relating to peers, you know, preparedness, even things that sometimes at meetings parents will say, they just still aren't good at budgeting their time to know that in 3 weeks they have a test. You know, we need to help work on that because when you get to college, you don't have that preparedness. So it does encompass a couple other more specific areas underneath, but that's a good point. It's more than just what a lot of people think is academic in terms of grades and school.
Look at math, give me a hand.
Yeah, but that does also tie into what we look at. You know, we have discussions about curriculum, and we look at things like, you know, career and college readiness and choice of courses, you know, trying to stretch and get counselors and teachers to encourage students to take more challenging courses, especially if we know they're able and capable, to give themselves as much opportunity for post-secondary options, regardless of what they might be. You know, because some kids, I think, oh, I'm going to take this class, it's easier, I can get an A, versus taking something more challenging and gaining more information out of it and becoming a more critical thinker than it just being about the grade. You know, so we're having a lot more of those discussions and working on that. And I think the counselor role is starting to become more embedded in the academic discussion than it might have been, you know, 20 or however many years ago.
Thanks. Do you foresee running into constraints? So, you know, as we collect this information and we may find here's other items that need to be prioritized that we want to be able to provide more counseling services to our student population, but you only have so many counselors, so many hours in the day, and there's kind of, and it becomes a priority of what, you know, the seniors need to be lined up for post-secondary, wherever, you know, whether they're going to work or going to college and get their ducks in a row, but then you've got, you know, other people. So do you foresee that being a challenge that, you know, we only have so many counselors, and if you expand the breadth of what you're going to provide, do you have enough manpower to provide it?
Well, and actually that is starting to come out from all of the discussions, whether it's at their quarterly meetings or the results of the parent surveys, because they're kind of, the two sides are kind of having the same area of priority, and that is a lot of what the counselor side is saying. You know, there's only so many of us, and there's more and more expectation to make sure that we get everybody as ready as we can. And even in the elementary levels, you know, we're having some increased needs that they might not have had before, you know, because they do provide a lot of curriculum-based activities, and they work with the teachers and go into the classrooms and do a lot of proactive approaches. But sometimes there's a lot more crisis-level type of things, a lot more families, it seems, that are, you know, having more family kinds of issues and concerns that they're turning to the schools for, where can I go to get, you know, support for this, where can I go for support for that. So that's another thing that the counselors are doing, is they're trying to do a time equity study a little bit to see, you know, what is it that I spend my day on, and if I had to prioritize, what would it be? And I know at the high school, what comes up frequently is sometimes if I'm, now that we're going to online, we're hoping with testing it, that might diminish, but it's early to tell, you know, getting all that test preparedness, they said, you know, that takes up a lot of our time. So if a student has an issue and is at my door, they get conflicted with, got to get the tests ready. But they have something that is more immediate. And, you know, obviously our focus is people piece and the student piece, but we also have all those other, you know, mandates and constraints. So, yeah, it's going to dovetail, and I think at some point we'll see how it ferrets out. The discussion might be, you know, we only have so many people and so many hours, like you said, and what do we need to do to address those areas of priority, but can we really let go of anything that's already being done? You know, and as much as I would like to get 30 hours in a day, I still haven't figured it out, so. You know, but it's been a very proactive group. They've been very positive about it. It hasn't been, you know, like a backwards model, for lack of a better term. They didn't come in with, this is what, you know, we need more of this, more of that, more people. They've really been, you know, going about it in a proactive way. So I think it'll be really telling information, but there'll be a lot of bigger discussions as a result of that, which is, I think, kind of where you were going.
Thanks, Gina.
All right.
Item H, hearing of the public. Persons wishing to address the board may do so at this point. No formal action will be taken on subjects that are not included on this agenda until the board has had an opportunity to study them. Comments regarding personnel must be submitted in writing through the office of the superintendent. In order for the board to complete its planned agenda in an effective and efficient manner and to provide sufficient opportunities for members of the public to be heard, hearing of the public shall be limited to 30 minutes. Does anybody wish to be heard this evening? Sir, your name and address, please.
My name is Fred Peterson, and I want to thank the board for passing the resolution to invoice the Ohio Department of Education for charter school deductions. I also would like the board to take Mr. Ziegler's recommendation and continue with a letter writing campaign as well, and continue to educate the taxpayers in our district about the cost to our district. I've raised the point before about charter schools, specifically for-profit charter schools, and was told it's not really a local issue, but all of you know it's a very local issue. It costs us money, it costs our students opportunities to the tune of over $2 million, which could have been spent here, as opposed to leaving our district. So again, I want to thank you very much for passing the resolution. I hope you continue to work toward with my goal, anyway, of eliminating for-profit charter schools and bringing that money home. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody else wish to be heard this evening? Gentlemen?
Mr. Sowers.
I'd point out maybe two things for the benefit of our young visitors. Number one is, why do we have Board of Education members? You've heard a lot of technical terms here this evening. You've heard a discussion of a lot of complex things and issues. Mr. Burdine's financial report. Well, we have elected board members because there are technicalities, because there are complexities that would not occur to the average citizen. And so when we get into complex things that govern our lives, we elect people to represent us as our community, okay, who can delve into these issues and gain the understandings of them so that we can make intelligent, informed decisions. And so that would be one. And then the second thing I would point out, at the beginning of the meeting, Mr. Jansen read a statement about this meeting as a meeting of the Board of Education in public. And he said, this is not considered a public community meeting. And the difference is this. If this were a public community meeting, we would be here to talk about whatever the public brought up. Okay? This is not a public community meeting, but rather it's a meeting of the board to conduct its business in the presence of the public so that anybody who's interested and wants to know can see how the business has been discussed and how the decisions were arrived at. And so those be two really key things, I think, for people who aren't familiar with how this all works to try to have an understanding of.
And now that you've been to one of our meetings, you can see how well attended they are.
Don't be a stranger in the future.
I know you're only coming to Homer, but you're welcome anytime.
And this is a well attended board meeting.
Thank you.
That's true. Thank you, Joey.
But thanks for attending this evening. We do appreciate it. Item I is new business. Number one, personnel contract recommendations for certificated, extracurricular, and classified as in tabs 4, 5, and 6. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Mr. Wyckoff, any comments?
Yes, thank you, Superintendent. In the certificated staff recommendations, what we have is one staff member who is extending her FMLA. She decided to go the full 12 weeks with the birth of her new child. So we grant her that extended time. The extracurricular contracts are the normal contracts this time of the year. We had one switch. We had one person that has resigned for the spring play. But we do have a replacement, so you'll see one resignation and then one new hire. And that was just to fill that slot when the person needed to resign. And then to the classified staff recommendations, and this is another one of the retirements that we had on here. Tom DePasquale from the high school, who was a custodian one, did resign in December, January 1st, I should say. And his replacement is Vladimir Labershin. Vladimir is coming to us from Cleveland through the city. He works at Cleveland Hopkins Airport currently right now in maintenance and custodial, and will be joining the Redsville family. The other things that you see on this is leave of absence, a couple of employees that took some personal unpaid days. We have some more substitutes to try and fill positions when we have staff members that are out. And our recall order, there has been no movement on that for the past few months. So even though we have one additional staff member, it is not an increase in FTEs. It's actually a replacement for a retirement. So.
Thanks, Brian. Any other questions? Roll call, please.
Mrs. Moran?
Yes.
Mr. Dose?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Jensen?
Yes. Item passes 4-0. Item I-2, shared service agreement for treasurer and revised employment agreement with our treasurer. In tab 7, authorizing and entering into a joint employment agreement with Cuyahoga Valley Career Center for shared services of the treasurer and approval of a revised employment agreement with Richard A. Verdine as treasurer of Brooksville Broadview Heights City School District, effective April 1, 16 through July 31, 18, for the terms and conditions set forth in the attachment. Have a motion, please.
So moved.
Comments or questions?
My only question is, what's the timing from the other side? Have they already passed a resolution? Are they about to? Or
it's on their agenda for this Thursday, the 25th.
Okay.
6:30.
So they're still work right on top of each other?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. My only
question. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Brunner?
Yes.
Mr. Dose?
Yes.
Mr. Zimmer?
Yes.
Mr. Jensen?
Yes. Motion passes 4-0. Item I-3, appointment. Oh, by the way, congratulations. Welcome back, Mr. Cotter. Item I-3, appointment of staff to positions for the 15-16 year. Item 3A, expulsion appeal hearing officer as designee of the board. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
It's rare that we get an appeal to an expulsion hearing and a decision, but we need to have a procedure or process in place in the event that we get one. The district in the past has hired some outside people to come in and do it. And I've used this arrangement with success in other districts. It eliminates the cost of bringing anyone else
sure.
in, and I think this will serve us well for the remainder of the school year.
Thank you. Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Murnauer?
Yes.
Mr. Dose?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Jensen?
Yes. Motion passes 4-0. Item I-4, resolve to approve the revised Brooksville Broadview Heights City School boss job description as per separate documents and tab 8. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
These job descriptions are being updated mostly to bring things into some legal compliance and to make sure that different duties are placed in the proper categories for staff. They've been developed cooperatively between Mr. Wyckoff, Gina Simsek, and leadership from BOSS. They've been reviewed and approved by legal counsel, and we think this is a giant step forward towards improving the job descriptions and our ability to let staff know what's expected and our ability to supervise staff in the performance of what's expected.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Berger?
Yes.
Mr. Dose?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Jensen?
Yes. Motion passes 4-0. Item I-5, general items A through C in tabs 9 and 10.
Motion.
Thank you. Thank
so
you.
So moved.
Thank you. Honest. The field experience thing with Kent State University is a repeat of the same agreements we've had in prior years. It works for the district. We want to keep it. We shared information with the board in writing prior to when the State Department was in to review our food service program operation. They have many commendations and many accolades for the way in which the program operates and works. They asked us to make two minor changes to two policies, which you see before you. We've communicated, they're so minor, we sent out an email to the policy committee and said, do you think we need to come and talk about this? They were so minor, we didn't get a response back. So we bring those to you. And then this C is a student, a senior who wishes to complete the school year here in Brooksville Broadview Heights. And that's, we've approved in the past pursuant to board policy.
Can I just ask a question? Because I never really went through this in huge detail.
Right.
We're not allowed to serve whole milk. I know that sounds like a really petty nonsense
thing. It's that fat stuff.
My favorite.
I just wanted to ask.
You just bring your own.
My
kids. That's our biggest problem. I have a little skinny grandson who needs whole milk. I don't know.
Sorry, I just
that's fine.
That hit me when I saw that.
We'll call
New York City. You can't get a big song.
This is for
Yes, motion passes 4-0. Item J, committee reports. Financial liaison? Audit?
Not going to do the audit to conclude any day now.
Any day.
And it is from the essential conclusion. We're just waiting for the post-audit conference final report to be released.
Which I so
love. Yes, those are so those are more exciting than my financial presentation. Imagine that.
They thank you for coming last week. Just to add a little fun to me.
Permanent improvement?
Yeah, we have not met, although I would say it's likely that if we work with the Business Advisory Council going forward as well with some of the facility things, that I would want to include, obviously, this group as well. But right now, since our last meeting, we have not met nor made any progress.
Thanks. Transportation appeals? Always good when that's not.
Right.
Policy Committee, I think we just nailed it.
Just did it.
CDCC, Rick, do you have anything for Kathleen? She
has video is Thursday. I'm not aware of anything really additional to that.
And STEM, Kathleen heads up, so unless anybody has anything there. Any other reports? Item K, the board acknowledges the decision of the expulsion officer as a result of the expulsion hearing held on February 9th, 2016. Item L, executive session to consider the appointment, employment, or compensation of a public employee as per board policy 0166. Item A, and for the purpose of reviewing negotiations or bargaining sessions with public employees concerning their compensation or other terms and conditions of employment as per board policy 0166. Item E, may I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Motion passes 4-0. We will now be in executive session. When we come out of executive session, there will be no more official business conducted this evening. Thanks very much for attending, and look forward to seeing you all again soon.
Thank you.